Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Odyssey Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
Well, we all thought the playoffs would be pretty exciting, and they haven't disappointed to this point. Welcome into another episode of Big Time Baseball. I'm your host, Tony Gwynn Jr., along with my co-host, John Heyman. And John, listen, these playoffs have been pretty exciting. I mean, we've had some barn burners with a whole bunch of runs scored. We've had a couple of quick ones with in the Braves Brewers series. But the thing that continues to stand out to me, John, is that these teams are very evenly matched going across the board.
Yeah, it does feel that way. I mean, I feel like the Dodgers and the Giants are a little better than the other teams, but they're playing each other, and that's just the way it turned out. I mean, you know, it feels like all of the matchups, I agree with you, Tony, evenly matched, and we're going to get no sweeps as we stand here in the first round, and that will continue, obviously. Every team's won at least one game, and all the matchups are as close as possible at this point. After three games, if it's 2-1, that's as close as it can be. So it's been very interesting. I mean, Houston's looked a little better than the White Sox, and Boston certainly has been interesting. I think this will be an upset if they pull it off and they're up 2-1 as we do this. But the NL both tied at 1-1 and both now going to the, I guess you would say, underdog. I don't know if the Dodgers are really the underdog. They're home park now as we start today. Right. They're full slate today. And you're right. It's been very, very close. Very, very interesting to this point.
Yeah, there hasn't been really any dull games in any of the series. Let's start out east. Let's start with the Red Sox and Rays. This series has had no shortage of anything you're looking for, some things you've never even seen before, as in last night's game. But this series has flipped on its head. The Red Sox now a win away from eliminating the Rays after some say a controversial call. But here, listen, on that particular call, John, here's where I'm at on it. It is the rule. If you know you don't like that particular rule, then maybe you raise your short fences up to where everybody else has it, because that's the only reason why this is a conversation. The ball, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Kiermaier hits a ball off of the base of the wall that ricochets and accidentally off of Renfro, the Hunter Renfro, the right fielder, goes over the wall. Now, by rule, with a runner on first, that is considered a ground rule double. Now, as the play stands, the runner would have easily scored from first. He was stealing on the play. But again, when the play started, he was at first. The rule is you are awarded two bases. That prevented the Rays from getting that run, and they would later lose in walk-off fashion to the Red Sox. But there's a lot of people upset about the particular rule, but you know what? This is how the rule has been. To me, it's no different than a ball bouncing off going in the ivy. It's the same thing. It's a two-base rule. That's it. That's the end of the story. Yeah.
You know what? The umps made the right call, so let's give them credit. That is correct. Yep. What happened? Now, you know, I hadn't remembered seeing that before. I mean, you're an outfielder. Did you ever do that, or did you ever see that play?
I can't say that I've ever seen it, ever had. I've had balls hit off the wall, ricochet off me, but they didn't necessarily, they didn't go over the wall. So, I mean,
it's pretty hard.
These things, it is unique to this Boston stadium because the walls are so low.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think I saw on MLB Network, I think I saw somebody with the Rays do it. It might have been Pham. I'm not sure. But I saw somebody do it, and there was the same call. So the rule is the rule, and the umpires are enforcing it correctly. I'll say this, though. On that play, and I'm not positive it was Pham on the other play, the outfielder made a very bad play and just flipped the ball into the stands. It was unintentional, but it was not a good play. So I mean, this happens so infrequently that I get why nobody's ever been up in arms about it before. But I would change that rule. Renfro did not make a good play. He didn't feel the ball properly. It popped out. I could be funny and say, oh, he should go have to chase the ball over the wall. That's probably not practical. I would say that it should be up to the discretion, which would mean an extra base for the runner, even if he wasn't stealing, because, I mean, he hit that ball so far away, and normally if you're going to hit the ball in the stands, you're not hitting it anywhere near you. I would say change the rule to give the runner three bases or maybe even the batter three bases, because that's not a good play. But as it was enforced correctly, and you know what, I don't think it's a major controversy today because Vasquez hit a two-run homer. I mean, right. You never know what would happen differently. Maybe not, but, Boston got two runs, and to me, it's over and done with, but I would think it's an opportunity to change the rule. As far as the series, you're absolutely right. It's flipped on its head. Boston has certainly got the momentum, and I know all the old school people are kind of rooting for Boston. I see it on MLB Network. They don't want to see Tampa, this team doing these weird things, winning. But I mean, you got to give them credit to win 100 games to get to this point. You know, McClanahan's going to start game five, I suppose, and that gives them a good shot if they get there. But what a situation to be in, to start three rookies and have two of them really just not get it done at all. And I understand they like bullpen games, but I mean, today might be their third bullpen game in a row. Tough to survive that, and certainly looks like Boston has got a pretty good chance here.
Yeah, listen, when you're winning games and you're ahead in the series, you can understand how you can maybe maneuver with bullpen days, but you're chasing now, and yep. You're going to have to win more games and play more innings in order to win this series. The bullpens may not be able to hold up. And just to go back to that play, as an outfielder, I want to explain what Hunter Renfro hit. You could argue his mistake was initially going after the ball, instead of playing it off the wall. But because he's going full tilt at the baseball when it's hit off the bat, it's going to be tough for him to slow down and stop on a dime in order to prevent that ball from ricocheting. I think once he made the decision to go after the baseball in the air on a line instead of playing it off the wall, that was a possibility. Maybe not that it actually bounces over the wall, but that he was going to get too close to the wall. It was going to ricochet and hit him. Now, you know, as you said, the rule is the rule. If you want to have the conversation about changing it, have at it. But you got to miss me with the outrage of Tampa. I mean, that them's, as they say, are the breaks for the Rays in this particular case. Let's go to the other AL divisional series. The Astros really dominated the first two games, and I tell you what, I thought that White Sox, I picked the White Sox to get to the World Series this year. I thought that they had a head up on the Astros from the standpoint of you didn't know what you're going to get out of the Astros starting pitching, but they got some fantastic performances in the first two games, and then all of a sudden the White Sox explode in game three. And they went in going away fashion. The offense came alive. And then after the game, you had some controversial, I guess, words from one of the White Sox relievers saying that he implied that the Astros have something slick going on. And listen, this is where, and by the way, that reliever was Ryan Tepera. Here's where I've always said about this Astros situation, John. It's a shame because I said this at the time, that everything they do at a high level will always be in question. And here we are. I don't necessarily believe that they're cheating right now. However, I completely understand people's suspicion to how well they played the first two games and how, you know, the offense didn't look as strong in game three. Now, that could just be a one-off. We'll find out more in tonight's game. But this is going to be a forever topic that the Astros are going to be dealing with, it seems like, no matter who's on the roster.
I think you're right. First, let me give you credit. You had Houston winning that division. I did not. I had the A's. Once it was Houston and the White Sox, though, we both liked the White Sox to win their divisions. You liked them even more going to the World Series. So, you know, your predictions at the beginning of the year, excellent. I did think Houston would win this series. We don't know that at this point. It's 2-1. They do have the edge. It is interesting, and you're right. I mean, once you're caught, you're always going to be under that cloud of suspicion, and they brought it on themselves. So I don't blame Ryan Tepera for bringing it up. You know, if he thinks it, I get it. My personal belief, and, you know, I'm just guessing here because they are under the cloud of suspicion, is, you know, I guess this human nature being what it is, who knows, but I can't imagine. Their offense, I think, is fantastic. It was pretty good last night. Not quite as good maybe in the first two games, but it's a pretty darn – when you got – what is Correa batting? Sixth in the lineup? Something like
that? Yeah,
that's a pretty good lineup. When you've got Carlos Correa batting sixth, I mean, I think they're just a very strong team. And the reason I didn't pick the White Sox, even though I felt their pitching overall top to bottom was the best. Well, Rodon, you know, I think he's going to be fine for the game four start. But, you know, he was rested so much, I wasn't really sure. And they just were not playing that well. And I get it. They were trying to maintain health. And, you know, I get it. Their division was the weakest from 2-5. So they had it pretty wrapped up by June or even before. So it threw me off. And I thought, well, you know what? They're just not playing well. Can they turn it on? It's a very young team. Houston has more experience, I thought. And I felt they had maybe a slightly better lineup, maybe not in the long run once Moncada and Jimenez and Robert reached their peak. But at this point, I felt Houston had a little better lineup, and I think they're on the up and up. But as I said, I don't blame Tepera for saying what he said.
Yeah, no, there's a couple things. The Astros, they don't give you any, you know, rest in their lineup. I mean, every one of those guys, especially with the emergence of the young kid Myers playing so well in this playoff so far, this is a tough lineup. We saw him twice this year here in San Diego, and each time you came away with the same thought, that this offense is really tough to navigate. The other person I want to give a lot of credit to is Lance McCullers, because he kind of set the tone for the Astros in that game one, and it just seems like he's always been overshadowed by either Verlander or Cole or Greinke when he comes over. And it seems like he was looking forward to being the ace of the staff. And he gets a chance in game one. He sets the tone. They win that game. And if he's pitching like that, I think that gives that Astros pitching staff a little bit of length. Now, well, they still are in control of this series going into tonight's game, and with a chance to clinch. But this White Sox team is not a bad team at all, and they have a lot of weapons. You're right, their offense – and it may not be right now, but as Jimenez and Robert continue to kind of grow, and Moncada continue to grow into who they are, this lineup is going to resemble what that Astros lineup looks like right now. This is like the Astros early on with the White Sox. Now you start moving a few years from now, this team is going to be one to be dealt with. It'll be interesting to see who, if they can finish the Astros off in this series.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned McCullers. I mean, he's a great pitching performance in game one. And, you know, not everybody has to throw 98. It's good to see a guy whose curveball is his main pitch do it. And it's nice to see a good outing in the American League. American League's been more of an offensive show so far, generally. McClanahan had a very nice start for Tampa, and McCullers for Houston, but mostly the offensive guys have stood out. A National League, as we expected, would be more pitching-oriented, I think. And certainly Atlanta has had good pitching performances, and we knew Milwaukee would, and we know the Dodgers have good pitch. They have all those teams have great pitching. So American League has been more of an offensive show, and it's been very interesting to this point to see how it's gone. But you're right about McCullers. That's big. Little worried about some of the younger pitchers, though, on that staff.
Right.
And on the other one, too. They're not living up to the hype. It's a lot of pressure in these games, and we've seen a lot of rookies and really young pitchers really struggle. And, you know, Cease got the call. Tony La Russa made that call to pitch him in an elimination, the first elimination game. And obviously he was more worried about Rodon than I think Rodon is. And, of course, they probably have the better pitcher now in game four, so he may come out looking like a genius, as you said before we went on. And La Russa does come out smelling like a rose a lot, and it may work out. But I thought that was a gamble. And Cease obviously had been very good his last few starts. But like I said, they've been coasting. Those games don't matter to the White Sox, and this one really mattered. And you never know how a rookie's going to perform once he gets that chance.
Yeah, no doubt. We can't go away from the White Sox-Astros series without the one controversial play in that series. It was a ground ball to first base, and Gurriel throws it, and it hits off of Grandal, who had grounded to first base. And so it ricochets off of the throw, is off the line because of it, run scores. There was no interference called in this play. And the thing that drives me nuts about this particular play is it's a discretionary call. It has turned into that, at least. And too often you get different things. I rewind my mind back to, it was game six or game seven in Houston in the Nationals Astros series. Trey Turner hits a ground ball to first base, seems to be in his running line. In the process, the throw is up the line a little bit. Gurriel's glove gets knocked off, and they end up, a run ends up scoring, and they ended up calling Turner out. And so I don't see how Turner can be out 2 years ago, 3 years ago, no, 2 years ago now, and Grandal is not, and he is, I mean, his 2 feet are in the grass. They're in the grass. And yeah. I can't for the life of me understand it.
I don't get it either. I mean, by the letter of the law, it's kind of discretionary, I guess. And they felt he didn't do it intentionally. It wasn't on purpose that he got between the throw and the receiver. You know, I might beg to differ on that one. I'm with you. Turner was much closer to the baseline than this.
Much closer to the base.
Back. Yeah. If I recall. And, you know, I guess early on the run, you're allowed to establish your own base path. You know, I get that if you're between second and third or first
right,
and second,
right.
You're not always running the straight line if you're planning on rounding or something. But the straightest line is right down the line, home to first, right? If you're really trying to get there quickly, you're not in the middle of the infield as he was. So, you know, I guess.
Here's the other thing, John. Here's the other thing. 95% of hitters in the big leagues, period, hit in the very back of the box. So you're already, by even if you take a full swing, you are still in line to at least be on the inside of the dirt.
Yeah, he's in the back of the box. I don't think they gave him enough credit for being as smart as he is. You know, they thought, you know, he's just being a silly kid out there in the middle of the infield. I don't think so. I think he understood there was a runner coming from third, and he wanted to disrupt Gurriel's throw. And you know, I would have liked to have seen replay. I don't know if it would have changed it because he didn't like move his hip like Reggie Jackson did 45 years ago. And Reggie just moved it like a millimeter, so it was hard to tell, and I can see why they didn't make that call either. But, you know, it wasn't the right result. I mean, it was a grounder. The pitcher did the job. The throw was the right throw. The base runner did not do the right thing. Yet the base runner is the one who's rewarded. The pitcher is not rewarded, and the Gurriel is not rewarded. So to me, this was not the right result. This was not justice. And, you know, if they have to change a rule to say it can be overturned or looked at on replay, or the guy should be in the base path, not to establish his own line. I mean, what if he ran to the pitcher's mound? Can he do that?
Now listen, don't get me wrong. I am not mad at Yasmani for taking advantage of the rules.
Smart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a smart play. But here's the deal. And I'm getting the angle. I'm actually watching on TV now. I'm getting the angle. He had to take because he's in the back of the box. Yes. And listen, I don't mind you even being on the inside of the dirt. I think it's virtually impossible to take a full swing and not be on the inside of the dirt as a right-handed hitter. But to be on the grass is a whole nother step and a half further than you need to be. And so I think he used the rule to his advantage, and it works out. It helps his team get a win. But there needs to be a more specified area, because the reality is the running line that they have is not a reasonable line either, right? Nobody is going to take a swing and then basically have to do a kind of an ice skating move to get to the running line that they have for you. It's not feasible. They got to figure out a better way to kind of keep runners in their lane and not have it ridiculous one way or the other. Because right now there is just too much chaos and nobody really understands what's allowed,
well,
what's not.
You know, people have said, let's hit a bag in foul territory. I know they do that in some softball leagues or something. I don't know. I don't play softball at this stage, but, you know, maybe that's a solution. I don't know. We don't see this very often, but it is interesting. No. We had, and again, I don't think the umpires made any obvious mistakes here. Still debatable on number two. On number one, it was the right call on the Renfro knocking into the bullpen. We're wondering if maybe the rule changes or something different about the rules can be done, because didn't feel like the justice was done in either case. Now that said, again, the Red Sox won that game, 2-run homer, yeah. Walk off, they get the win and they deserve it. And the other game was 12-6, so this wasn't an impactful play, but maybe it opened our eyes about the rule book.
Certainly gave us a bunch of topics to talk about on our show today. Let's talk about the National League, because of the four series, these have been the cleaner of, I think,
yes,
the four. And I think the better baseball is being played in these four. And it's, you know, I guess it's I'm old school from standpoint as I like marquee matchups, pitching matchups, and we've had those in these series. And now, as you said, no, there will be no sweeps on this side. Both series tied at one. Dodgers in their building starting, I believe, tonight. And then on the flip side, you got the Braves now at home in a 1-1 series in their building tonight. So this has been a well-played series. As you mentioned, Dodgers and Giants look like they're playing the best baseball of the teams that are remaining both in the National and American League, John.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they played the best during the season and win 107 games for the Giants, 106 for the Dodgers. Most years we don't have a 106-game winner. This year we had two, and, I mean, you got to give the Giants credit. The Dodgers can't shake them. It's 1-1 now, and you think on paper the Dodgers are better. Now, of course, both teams have lost their first baseman. So, I mean, that's, I guess, fair in a way. Muncy and Belt both being out. Seems like it's certainly hurt the Dodgers. I think we're going to see Pujols now in game four with San Francisco throwing a lefty. I keep thinking the Dodgers are going to win, but, God, the Giants, got to give them credit. I mean, amazing season. Posey, just so impressive. I mean, he didn't play last year due to the COVID. He sat it out. You know, we don't blame anybody for doing that. Came back. Didn't miss a beat. He's himself. To me, he's a Hall of Famer. And, you know, such a valuable player. And Crawford, obviously, has just had a terrific year for the Giants as well. And they're just a tough team. And if there's any justice, it goes to game five, because these, to me, are the two best teams. So, it's a shame one of them has to leave us pretty soon in a couple days, but that's the reality of the situation.
No, you're absolutely right. This is I've had the Dodgers. I think you and I both have had the Dodgers all year long. But the more you watch the Giants play, the easier it is to see them not only win in this series, but then moving forward and beating everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think they don't. Whoever wins this is the favorite to win the World Series. In my mind, yeah. They're the two best teams.
They don't make any mistakes defensively. You mentioned the years that Posey's had, the year that Belt's had, the year that Longoria's had. They've had some guys kind of sprinkled in there. Lamont Wade Jr. has been a big factor for them during the course of the season. But that one is that series is if we're lucky, we get to see five games because these two are the best teams. On the other side, Braves at home. They have Anderson going tonight. Brewers have Peralta going, who has pitched as good as anybody in the second half, really all season long, not just the second half. He's been kind of the unsung hero of that Brewer staff because we talk about Woodward and Burns so much. Peralta's been pretty good, and it's come down to exactly what I thought. Will the Brewers be able to score enough runs against this Braves ball club, and would the bullpen be able to hold it down for the Braves? They were a little shaky in game two, but they came away. Will Smith looked good in the back. But that's what this series is going to come down to, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Freed was fantastic, and I was a little surprised they removed him after six innings and 81 pitches for a pinch hitter. I get it's Jocktober, as they say, for Jock Peterson, who's always good in October. I'm not sure why he's not starting some games. I mean, the guy has got a proven postseason record, but two outs, nobody on. I would have left Freed head, and Freed's, I think he's one of the best hitters in the National League for a pitcher anyway. I think he had 15 hits this year. So I didn't get that, but it proved fine. I should never question Snit. He's done a great job. I think we both had Atlanta and Milwaukee winning their divisions this year, I think. So we were both on that one, so we got that right. I felt coming in, you know, Milwaukee coasted a little bit, maybe to some degree, and I was a little nervous about them. I know they're probably favored in the series, but I thought Atlanta might take them down. You know, looking at the pitching matchups on paper, you know, Burns and Woodruff had the best years. But to me, Freed and Morton, the way they pitched in the second half, those were even pitching matchups. And they pretty much proved to be. Burns got a little bit better of Morton based on Rowdy Tellez hitting that home run. And then Freed got a little bit of the better of Woodruff, and now we have another even pitching matchup. Peralta, who's got terrific stuff, and you've got Ian Anderson, who was very good in the postseason last year for a young guy, rookie, and again, he's a rookie. He's still a rookie, just like a Rosarena. You know, Atlanta, even without Acuna and Ozuna, their hitting's a little better than Milwaukee. That was kind of the difference for me. Of course, Milwaukee's got that great bullpen. You know, Devin Williams took himself out by punching a wall. Never a good idea. I still think Milwaukee's bullpen is better with Hader there. So, I mean, this matchup is basically a pick 'em. Makes sense. It's 1-1. And although I picked Atlanta, I still can't pick. I don't know. We both had both these teams winning their divisions. Are you on the other side of this one? You kind of think the Brewers?
I think I picked the Braves to win this one.
All right, you're with me then. All right,
their offense is good and it's deep. Very, I mean, it's close to
right. Even without the two guys, yeah.
And that's an amazing point because those two were huge. And obviously, Acuna is one of the brightest stars in the game today. You're missing his production. You're missing Ozuna's production, but their lineup, even without those guys, is a National League version of the Astros. It's extremely deep, especially with Soler playing as well as he did since being traded over here. It gives this team another gear. And again, it'll boil down to if you can stop it on the other side for the Brewers. So we'll see full boat of games. Every series is in action today. So we'll know more after today's end. Now, John, with you know, October usually means your phone starts to buzz a little bit because you're getting some of the insides around the league. On our inside corner today, we'll focus on some of these offseason moves. Plenty of moving parts this offseason in search of anything from presidents to managers or filling roster spots. What you got?
Yeah, I mean, starting your neck of the woods with the San Diego, Tingler, we knew on this podcast that he wasn't going to last. You know, good baseball man, but in a tough spot. I think the clubhouse, you know, was against him by the end. You were there, you lived it, but I think they finished 12-34. You know, that's really the reason. As AJ Preller said, I thought he did a good job on the press conference. It was the 12-34 more than the clubhouse that decided, and that's the way it should be. I don't think Preller is really easily swayed by the clubhouse, but it was interesting to hear that several of the veteran players were asked by the ownership, the owner who's got the respect of everybody. Peter Seidler has done looking to be a very, very good owner. I know he's early in his stage as an owner, but people like him very, very much and like the way he's handling things. Obviously, this was not the year they expected, the clubhouse is an issue, was an issue, and it was important for them to move on. It's interesting to hear them say, and you said this to me weeks ago, that if they changed, they might go to another young guy. Now, AJ Preller has hired two young guys, starting with Andy Green, and that worked out for only 2 years, and I believe it was 2 years, and then again with Jace Tingler, 2 years, and they're not ruling that out. I don't know if they're saying that just because they're not sure they're going to get the veteran that they want, or they actually are considering it. I do kind of believe them. I think they are considering a lot of young guys, but there's some big interesting names out there. One's Bruce Bochy. I think the fans would love that. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's an incredible manager. I mean, Dave Roberts, his good friend, said he didn't think he would do it. I'm kind of with Dave Roberts. I think that's probably a long shot at this point. Buck Showalter, who I work with, worked in Texas when AJ Preller was there. Now, Buck ultimately was let go in Texas, so you wonder about that possibility. He obviously had a good relationship with Manny Machado, which is a nice start, and he's been a very good three-time manager of the year. Like another guy I'm going to mention, Dusty Baker, three-time manager of the year, who's done a great job. Some odd reason, we can talk about that more later if you want, up to you, but he does not have a contract in Houston. They've extended in different places, Baltimore, Arizona, and Miami, all extended last place finishing managers year, not big extensions, but and I'm not standing against these managers, Mattingly, Lovello, and Hyde, but Dusty is sitting there without a contract. You want to clean up your clubhouse, that's not a bad way to start. So I think Dusty is definitely a possibility. The other one that I mentioned already was Ron Washington, who came in second at Tingler. He's got a rapport already from Texas with AJ Preller, and I think he now has come out and told Robert Murray that he'd be interested. So, of all the names we mentioned, I think Washington might be the more likely, although I'm not going to say he's likely because I think they're considering all those young guys, as you predicted. Brad Ausmus is very well respected. I know he's had two chances. The second one was quite a short chance, and very smart guy, San Diego guy, so I could see that. If you're talking a first-timer, Kotze is a guy who's respected around the league. He did play in the Padres organization, and they have some potential in-house candidates as well. So, there's a number of directions they can go. I think their list is long now as opposed to the Mets baseball president. That's a very short list. And it's probably difficult to predict at this point, but I do think Wash is on the list. And I think Dusty, if they don't extend him for some odd reason in Houston, is a consideration and should be with that clubhouse issue that they do.
That'll be a mind-blowing decision by the Astros if they don't bring back Dusty Baker. I mean, I don't know if anybody else could have stepped into that situation and basically keep the train moving at the same speed that it's been moving. I mean, in his first year, they get to a ALCS and is one game away from going back to a World Series. Here they are in his second year, full season, and they win the West again. They are 2-1 up right now in the divisional series. So, it would be crazy. It would be crazy for them not to bring him back.
I don't get it. But, it's a situation where he was hired by the owner, Jim Crane, and they have a GM, a young GM, who's done a very good job in James Click. And, it's an arranged marriage. And, it's a bad sign that Dusty has not been extended to this point. This has happened three times. Now, when he was with the Giants, and he was not getting along with the owner, Peter McGowan, at that point, he just you know, they had made the playoffs in his last year there. And I think that was the World Series year, as a matter of fact. They got to the World Series.
Yep.
Almost won the World Series. So he was hired immediately by the Cubs. So, you know, worked out nicely for Dusty. Cincinnati got the Reds, small market team in the playoffs. 90-plus wins, if I recall correctly. He was let go. Washington, I think he had mid-90s wins. I was doing a great job. The players loved him. The GM wanted to keep him. And, you know, the ownership didn't want to pay the freight. And they let him go. So if he's let go again, this will be the fourth time off of a playoff team. I mean, to me, baseball should get down on their hands and knees and thank the lucky stars. They have a renaissance man in his 70s who everybody loves. The players love. The media love.
Everybody
loves this guy. It's crazy to me. You got to look at the bigger picture. And, you know, a lot of these young – and I don't know what's going on in James Click's mind. I really can't speak for him. Maybe he will bring them back. But you got to look at the bigger picture here. You got a clubhouse that is now together. They like Dusty. They played well for Dusty. That's the picture. That's the important thing. Are they perfectly on the same page? Maybe not. But to me, what a mistake this would be. As you said earlier – he's helped change the story. Now, I know Ryan Tepera brought it up, but, I mean, this story has been muted. It's been muted for the last year and a half. And I think a lot of that is you've got a great guy like Dusty Baker leading these troops. You know, some of it was they had no fans last year. That helped. But a lot of it is having Dusty Baker. And to me, it's crazy. And if he's gone, and if he is, he better have a job immediately. It would look ridiculous for baseball if he doesn't.
I'm just saying, if this is an arranged marriage, then ownership needs to step in and force it to continue be arranged marriage. We'll see how this one goes. Let's go to Chicago. David Ross, is he going to be extended? This one, in my opinion, I mean, at least from my standpoint, is a surprise it hasn't gotten done yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's been talked about for a little while now. I think Bruce Levine was the first to report they were talking, and they are talking. I'm a little surprised. I don't know what his leverage is. I think, you know, he's a good guy. You know, he's not proven as a manager at this point. It wasn't his fault. They didn't give him a team, or they gave him a team for half a year and they took it away. So if they like him, if they're comfortable with him, I'm all for it. That's fine. Go ahead and extend him. And I'm with you. I'm a little surprised it hasn't gotten done yet. I assume it will, and they'll probably pick up the option that they have on him and then maybe extend him another year. Maybe that's the debate, whether he wants more than another year beyond that. But at this point, to me, he's unproven. So I hate to be with management, but I kind of think one extra year beyond the picking it up, that's pretty nice. You know, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Fair enough. Last of the front office decisions, the Mets. They have a president of baseball operations position available, and you tell me, because it seems like it's Billy Bean or bust.
Yes, I agree. That's the way it looks to me too. you know, I think, you know, they had three people on the list, Theo Epstein, and they had Theo and Steve Cohen had a short conversation
really short.
Yeah. I mean, it was a short interview, but it was a conversation on the phone. And they decided it wasn't a match. And they're probably right. They're probably too similar. And Theo has two good jobs now. You know, I mean, he wants to be part of an ownership group. You know, Steve Cohen isn't looking to sell any part of the team. He just bought the team. So he's not bringing in someone to be part of the ownership group. You know, if Billy Bean or somebody of that great ilk wants a 1%, you know, maybe that can be arranged. I don't know. He does have a small percent with Oakland as it is now. I do think the A's will give permission. We don't know yet if they have already done that. They may well have. And, you know, people around baseball think that Billy Bean may actually do this. It's hard to believe in a way. He is 58 years old. He does have two teenage daughters. I'm not intimate with the situation. I don't know exactly what it is, how old they are or anything like that, but they are in high school. So, you know, it's a big step to move across the country. And I do think they're not going to let him pull the J.P. Ricciardi, his good friend who did the Red Sox GM from Worcester for some of it, or Whitey Herzog, who did it from St. Louis with the Angels for a while. You know, this is a big job in New York. You know, you from my understanding, they're not going to let somebody operate the team from 2,500 miles away. So he's got a big decision on his hands, and he is clearly the guy that they're focused on. If they can get him, they will be happy, and New York will be happy. No guarantee. Could go either way at this point. The other candidate at the top of that list is David Stearns with Milwaukee, who's done a very nice job. He did work for the Mets. Omar Minaya hired him. A very good hire, obviously, but he's been an even better hire for the Brewers, and the Brewers want to hang on to them. They've made that clear. Mark Adonazio does not want him going anywhere. It is a little bit of an interesting situation. He's got 1 year to go. If he's not extended, if he says, I'm not, you know, I'm going to let me wait and see, you know, maybe that gives the Mets an opportunity to wait a year. I mean, could they go another year without a top baseball guy? You know, obviously Sandy was the guy this year. He didn't want to do it 1 year. Does he want to do it 2 years? Probably not, you know. But, you know, I'm not going to rule that out as a possibility if they don't get any of their – if they don't get Billy Bean, and they might wait for a year for David Stearns. After that, you know, you hear Josh Burns' name. He's part of that Dodgers team that's done such a great job, or potentially Chris Antonetti with the Indians, who's been in charge there and done a very nice job in a smaller market. So – they are potential candidates if Billy Bean decides not to take it and they don't want to wait for David Stearns. Beyond that, I'm not sure. Is it possible that Sandy does it for another year? You know, I'm not going to rule anything out at this point. So, and I, you know, I do want to cover on the other side of town while we're still talking about managers, general managers. Aaron Boone is right now waiting to see what the Yankees decide. My understanding is that Hal Steinbrenner, the managing partner, will make that decision. He's obviously been very, very stable guy. He loves stability. And, you know, Brian Cashman will make a recommendation, and I believe it will be a strong one for Aaron Boone, who has a 601 lifetime winning percentage, which is fifth best out of hundreds of managers who've managed at least 450 games. I saw on Wikipedia, fifth best. He is behind Dave Roberts, and he's behind Joe McCarthy and two other gentlemen. And, you know, he's done a terrific job in the regular season. The Yankees obviously have not won the ultimate prize in his tenure to this point. But, you know, I think Cashman will I know Cashman will recommend that he stay, and it will be up to Hal Steinbrenner. And, you know, it may not come quickly. I said May, so nobody jump on me if they decide tomorrow or the next day. But, you know, Hal is a guy who likes to think about things, and maybe they'll see how all the other situations shake out before they decide also. And so I do think that Aaron Boone, the likelihood is that he will come back. No guarantee, but again, it will be Hal Steinbrenner's decision, I believe.
All right, John, let's move into some of the players. We know what the free agent market is going to look like with some of the big shortstops hitting the market, but there are a few guys that have opt-outs that are notable. Talk about some of those guys and what you think may happen with them.
Certainly. Castellanos, that's a big one with the Reds, and he's basically said no comment about his opt-out. He's got 2 years and $34 million to go, and he had a terrific season, had an OPS around 950, was top 10 in the league this year, and he will opt out. There's no doubt about that, and we'll play the market. I've heard that the Reds would be interested in bringing him back. Not a surprise there, but being that they're a small market, you know, you wonder if they're going to pay the freight. They did bring him in the first place. They obviously signed Joey Votto to that huge deal, and that deal looks better than it did a year ago, I'll say that, but Cincinnati's got some budgetary constraints, so no guarantee that they're able to keep him. Also in that division, Avisail Garcia has earned an opt-out by hitting the plate appearance number of 1,050. That counts last year's as prorated. And so he has the option of taking the $12 million or opting out. And I'm sure at this point, although I haven't confirmed this, that he will opt out and hope for a multi-year deal. Could be with Milwaukee, could be elsewhere, but obviously, he had an excellent season there. batting in the middle of that order and helping that small market team into the playoffs. You know, I don't think they want to lose any more offense. Offense has been
real quick, John.
So with, for the Brewers
with Garcia, year, you really said he reached his over 1,000 plate appearance market in order to get that opt-out. That's over 2 years, I'm assuming, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that is. I'm sorry. Yes, over 2 years, and that includes last year's, in which he played almost every day, prorated. So they multiplied it by 2.7. I'm not a mathematician, so I can't tell you his exact figure, but prorated, he went over 1,050, so he can opt out instead of taking the $12 million for next year, and I'm fairly certain that he will. Another one, and the last one I'm going to go over is J.D. Martinez. He's got 1 year, $19.375 million. Obviously a big offensive performer. The one reason that I think he will consider this is because I think we're looking at a potential likelihood of the universal DH. That is a DH in both leagues. That's the one thing it seems like both sides are able and willing to agree on is let's have the DH for both leagues. You know, not everybody can hit like Max Fried. There aren't too many hitters anymore among the pitchers, and they feel it's better for the health of the pitchers to keep them out of the batter's box. So universal DH gives him something to think about. That one I think can go either way, though. I'm not sure that he's going to opt out.
A lot of coin.
$375 million is quite a good salary for a guy who's mostly a DH at this point. Can play the outfield, though, so.
That market is going to grow if all of the other teams are now having DHs. So
yes.
It'll be interesting to see. Can't get there until we finish this playoff run. We'll keep you updated. Thanks for tuning in to Big Time Baseball. Make sure you check back every Monday for a new episode. Myself, Cody Decker, John Heyman. Every episode is on the Odyssey app, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Make sure you leave us some nice comments as well. Until next week, we'll check you again.